Fancy seeing you here.
You know, I've never been entirely certain what that phrase is supposed to denote. Does it mean this gathering here must be fancy because you're present? Or is it simply an expression of surprise at such a random meeting between two friends or acquaintances?
Jesus, boy, I was just saying hello.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 56 for the week of January 26, 2015. I am Nighttime Meeting Bridge, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Morning Vodka, Sarah D. Bunting.
This isn't awkward at all.
Raylan Givens-Taylor, Tara Ariano.
Just let me get that in seam one more time.
And hapless bartender Nick Reinwell Jones.
One more fatal stab wound and I quit.
Welcome!
Hello.
To everyone, hello. Especially our guest, Nick Reinwell Jones.
Hi, I'm all alone in a room.
He's all alone in a room in Los Angeles.
Me too.
Sarah's all alone in a room in New York. Everyone's all alone. And we should just say, as we're recording this, the blizzard of, what's it called, Juno?
Yes.
Winter Storm Juno is bearing down on New York like a shotgun full of snow. So if we lose Sarah, God forbid, it's probably weather related as opposed to just normal time warning.
Are you checking out what's outside our window right here?
Rainbow.
Yeah, rainbow.
I wasn't going to say anything, but Dave decided to be a dick about it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
does he even decide to be a dick about things?
That's a really good point that we should discuss at length at a future time. But for now, we're here to talk about Justified, which I have been covering for previously.tv for the past couple of seasons. This is, of course, its final season. But since Nick is also a watcher of Justified, we thought we would have him on to join us. So
I am indeed a watcher of Justified.
How did you? We got the first three episodes and we made them available to you. Did you watch episode two?
No, I only had time to watch the first one. So.
All right, we'll keep it to episode one, which is the only one that has aired as of record time. But I will say, Sarah, I know you've been meaning to get around to getting 100% on board with it, but if this was going to tip the balance in any direction, Sam Elliott shows up in episode two.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, because I decided that I will catch up somehow.
Woo!
I will cycle back around. I managed to do this with The Wire.
You did.
It's not easy to do.
You did it with Downton, too, like really fast, as I recall.
That's
yeah,
true.
That was like a Christmas holiday thing, and they're just like candy.
They are.
Pinko candy. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, so I watched the first episode of this season, and then I was like, well, let me just see if it's available streaming anywhere so I can start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Which I did. And speaking of going down easy, I watched the first four episodes of season one. It's so watchable and fun, and I really like it. And now I have Sam Elliott to look forward to.
You so do. And that's, I'm glad that you liked it from the start, because as I recall, the first, it takes a while to get going in season one. It doesn't really kind of lock in until around episode 9 or 10 of season
one. Right. It was very procedurally in the beginning.
For sure. And then it sort of gets into its kind of more of its arcs with the Raylan Boyd stuff. But anyway, let's talk about the season six premiere. Nick, as our guest, why don't you tell us first, what did you think?
I like that they're, you know, kind of stripping it down to basics for the end of the show and kind of getting rid of, in various senses, the, you know, characters that don't matter as much, like Dewey, that I'll get to in a minute. I think, you know, last season it definitely was, you know, not my favorite, and I started to wonder if it was, you know, if they had enough steam left to keep going, but, you know, focusing on just like Raylan and Boyd and their connection, and then, you know, like what is, they've really humanized Boyd more for the end, which kind of makes it more interesting than if he's just the villain.
Yeah.
So I like that too. And, I'm hopeful. I'm curious if they're going to do anything to try to retroactively pay off the supporting characters that have just been, you know, kind of irrelevant the whole time. And mainly, Tim and, I can't even remember her name because she
Rachel.
Rachel. Tim and Rachel, yeah. I mean, it's like they they brought them in the beginning as like, okay, you know, it's going to be a procedural and these are the characters that help out. But then, oh no, they don't matter at all.
Right.
And yeah, so.
I really like Tim too. So Tim it's a little sad to hear.
They're perfectly likable.
Tim's pretty great, actually. He's got a really cool backstory as a veteran and he was a sniper, right? In the war?
Yeah, and they've used that a few times, but.
Yeah, he feels already to me like he's going to be more central. Like you hardly ever see him and Raylan working together as much as you did in the premiere with them like tracking down Dewey and Boyd, and they had fun like friend chemistry, I thought, in the truck.
Yeah,
like, who are we going to follow?
Yeah, I actually made a note about that specifically that I was like, this guy.
Yeah,
this guy.
I think I've tweeted at some point that on any other show, Tim would be the dreamboat. So it's too bad for him that he's on this.
I know, right?
I mean, obviously, I'm biased, and I'm on the record with said bias. There it is.
Timothy. Off with his pants.
Justified this last season kind of reminds me, to go off what Nick was saying, that the same sort of thing where Alias, they just sort of like decided.
Yeah, yeah.
That, okay, here's the end date, so now we can give ourselves permission to start wrapping it up and sort of have this tunnel vision of like, these are the characters we want their stories sort of, you know, to converge and let's get to it. Mm-hmm. And finally, you know, the Boyd Raylan storyline can, you know, intersect and come to a head. So
yeah, yay. I think that happens with a lot of shows where there's definitely been lots of times when I've been about to bail on a show and then you hear that there's an end date. You're like, Well, I have to see how they winnow this down to actually be good. And I agree that like shedding Dewey in the premiere is kind of it's like a proof of concept of how things are going to be for this season, which I approve of.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I get it, why they had to dispatch him, and I don't begrudge him that. But I kind of like, in an alternate universe, I would also enjoy that Dewey somehow bumbles and fumbles his way through the whole series alive. You know, like, that would be a fine ending, too. And, like, you know, there's this little, you know, epilogue, right. You know, with Dewey after.
Or 2016, Better Call Dewey.
That's right, yeah.
Anyway, Sarah, you were going to say.
Well, it was funny watching this episode and then going back to the beginning and seeing that he's like the, you know, in the beginning of Buffy when Giles was getting knocked the fuck out in like every single episode,
yes.
Dewey's getting his head bounced off of a steering wheel.
Yep.
Like every episode. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a thing. Also, can I ask you a question about Art?
Yes.
What happened with him?
Oh, Art got shot last season. He was, Raylan was dating a social worker played by Amy Smart. I forget what her character's name was. But Art went to collect her because they were worried that she was going to be menaced by some of Dewey's cousins, I believe. And then he, in the process of collecting her to take her to a safe house, got shot.
Okay.
So he survived, obviously.
Yeah.
Given that he has a conversation with Ray.
The actor
Nick
is friends with my husband from college.
Oh.
And so we just saw him, like, they were in a stage reading together last month. Sorry to be a name dropper. But, like, he looked perfectly fine and hale. And so kudos to the makeup department because he looked like shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Art is a pretty great character.
Yeah.
I hope that he's not too much sidelined at the end for these last episodes. You know, they sort of hinted at it in this early conversation that he's going to be out for a while, convalescing and maybe never to return. But even if Raylan just has to stop in and check in and have bourbon and get some art wisdom, that'll be enough for me.
But yeah, speaking of Dewey before, that was definitely one of the things that kind of lost me about last season, because I felt like they did the same thing that The Simpsons in later seasons did with like Professor Frank and stuff like that. It was like, oh, he's funny in small doses. Won't he be even better in large doses? And no, he is not. And they kind of had to correct that mistake, I think, with him.
I think so, too.
He was definitely the most cartoonish character on the show. And I bet that actor is not really super sad about it, because how long do you think he has to sit in the makeup chair to get all those tats every day?
Well, and those tats, too.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, like he's can't be too happy with his, you know, Google image search.
Yeah, it's like his agent is like, you've been offered the lead in Schindler the Musical. Yeah. He's like, I will so fucking take it. Not.
Yeah. So what do we think of this whole Ava as informant storyline?
I don't like that character. I mean,
still?
I just, I mean, she, the prison thing just ruined. Like, that was such a drag.
I agree. She won me over, and then that whole, and all of her arc in season 5 lost me again.
I like willful Ava. I don't like defeated mopey Ava. Doesn't work totally for me at all. And I think either they got to get her back on track. She's got to find, you know, her core and grow a pair again. And perhaps that's something that could happen in the season. You know, like right now she's informing on Boyd, but it would be, you know, there's hints that she could flip and then, you know, Raylan would lose, you know, that asset. So hopefully that happens because I want to see her return to form because I think prison ruined her.
Yeah.
Well, and also, as Tara pointed out in her excellent particling of the episode, how does Boyd not see that something is way off? I mean, I think he sort of was like, is there anything you'd like to talk about? But not in a way that I think indicates that he knows anything's up with her, but could she be any more obvious about it?
Yeah, well, I think the way the episode closes suggests that he's starting to get suspicious. And Dave and I watched ahead, so we've watched this Tuesday's episode already. And without giving anything away, there's more payoff to that weird moment of him sitting and watching her sleep like a creeper. So Boyd is usually smarter than anyone gives him credit for, and I think
he always ends up knowing whatever's going on.
Yeah, and I think that this episode, the season, obviously has to end with a showdown between them. But I honestly, at this point, with him and obviously him and Ava, but him and Raylan. But I don't know how I necessarily want it to end. I mean, Boyd famously was not supposed to survive the pilot, and then he was so amazing. Walton Goggins, who plays him, was so great that they decided to keep him alive. And
the Margulies.
Exactly. They Margulies'd him. But I don't know if, like, I wonder if that is how it's going to end as well. Like, if it's going to be a Walter White ending for him or a gets away clean somehow ending. I mean, I don't
see... Or a Tony Soprano ending.
Yeah, that very well could happen too. I feel like they'll probably want to... Like, I can see FX wanting to keep some form of these characters around so they can do, like, future, even if not movies, like occasional TV movie check-ins or miniseries or something.
Can't you see an ending where Raylan Givens catches him...
And lets him go?
Has him dead to rights, but then lets him go. Lets them go.
Yeah.
That they make good on their plan to, you know... go to wherever it was. Where was it?
Costa Rica was one.
Yeah, right.
One suggestion.
And I can see that happening, and I'd be happy with that ending. That seems like it fits all the pieces.
I mean, I can see a story where they, like, flip on someone even bigger, and that's how they weasel out of getting prosecuted for all the shit that they've done. But, like, Boyd has killed a lot of people. He would have to really have a big turn for Raylan to forgive that, even given their history, I feel like.
Right.
What do you think, Nick?
Well, also, I think if they shift the focus to, like, that's another issue that I've kind of had with the show, that they have that kind of 24 syndrome, how, like, this is the guy in charge of the stuff. No, wait, it's this guy. Right. No, wait, it's this guy. And it's like, No, you've got to just make a bad guy at a certain point. And, like, let's just have Boyd be that bad guy.
Yeah.
Well, the show sort of had this weird trajectory with the bad guys where, you know, I think the point of the show was to tell smaller stories of, you know, Law and Order and crime.
Yes.
But then in season 2, they had such a dynamic and compelling foil.
Oh, Sarah, I'm so happy for you to get to watch it for the first time. I'm jealous
to see season 2 is
with Ma. So good.
Yeah, Ma Bennett, right?
Yeah, Mags Bennett.
Mags Bennett. Yeah, thank you. Was so good and was like a high point for adversaries on the show.
Yeah.
That... I at once am sad they never reached that level again. And I don't even think Boyd, you know, really, because, you know, his story sort of goes up and down and ebbs and flows. He doesn't really have the same sort of presence. Mm-hmm. And at once I'm sad about that, but I'm also kind of happy that the show had the presence of mind not to, like, weeds it where every season it had to be bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. They sort of, like, pulled back a bit and started to... tell smaller stories again. Mm-hmm. Not that it was a huge story, but you could kind of, you sense that the trajectory could go crazy, right? And then in season 4, he's working on some, you know, federal RICO case or something like that.
Right. I mean, that's very Elmore Leonard-y.
That's what I mean. I mean, they had the presence of mind to stick to what they were doing. Yeah. And season 2 was just sort of like bigger than the rest, but not big.
Yes.
And I was saying the temptation must have been there Because, you know, like a weed started off, like every season she was dealing bigger, badder drugs and getting deeper and deeper into the system.
Yes.
And it sort of like ruined a lot of what that made that show compelling. And it became farcical after a while that these small players somehow had this big hand, you know, in this giant world of super drugs. And they didn't do that on Justified. But at the same time, I kind of like, I really want another villain of that stature, you know?
But do we think Garrett Dillahunt could get there? He's pretty awesome.
I do like this Deadwood reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're great together.
Yeah, he's amazing. I feel like he's one of the most underrated character actors of our time.
Well, he managed to pull off two characters on Deadwood.
He did.
And you don't really think of, you know, immediate, that doesn't happen. Like, when a character, or rather an actor, reappears on Law and Order or something like that, it's, you know, Sarah
it's
would
par
be
for
like,
the course.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, there they are again. They're playing, you know, almost the same thing. But this one, like, he played the scum bucket at the start of the series, and he played that creepy hearse, you know, strong arm.
Yeah.
And totally different characters. Oh, both so good in their way. And
it's the cheekbones. He's got that death's head.
Yeah, there's a great
happening.
Mm-hmm. There's a great moment in the next episode, which airs this week.
Yep,
where he has a discussion with another landowner, and I won't give it away. But no, the landowner calls him something, and there's just this great piece of dialogue, and he just delivers it great. And it's one of those nice. He's like almost a cheerful villain. You know, they were talking about that a long time ago on Extra Hot. Great.
Yep.
But you were saying he's
not quite not like the mayor from Buffy or Chris Traeger from Parks and Rec,
but he has sort of this human element to him, where even though he's evil, he'd be easily hurt.
He's also polite. I mean, he's a Southerner.
Yeah.
Also, in the next episode, Buddy Garrity makes his appearance, so that's awesome.
Nice. Oh, finally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it's like the Southern Harry Potter, where you're like, well, wait, which of these? How have they not gotten this guy in there yet?
Seriously, or Wolf Hall? We were watching the British show Wolf Hall this weekend, and it was like every other actor. We were naming the seven things we had seen them in before, like every other British show.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, who else did we not talk about from this episode? Have we covered everybody?
I think we have.
Mary Steenburgen.
Right, and that's a weird little bit. I'm kind of waiting for her to do something.
Mm-hmm.
She just seems to be simmering
since
her character was introduced, don't you think?
Yes, but I feel like this is she's set up to be at least a big bad this season too.
Yeah, and I hope she gets to bare her teeth, because I think that would be a treat.
Nick, give us your final word on this premiere.
Here's my final word. Okay, did anyone else think it was weird that the safe deposit boxes in the bank had convenient hooks for to be able to do exactly what Boyd did, yank it off? I don't feel like those conveniently placed little eyes would be there for
know about the banking system.
I've never had a safe deposit box, so I wouldn't know, but yes.
Well, I feel like they usually flush against the wall instead of this would enable someone to pull it out if they really wanted to.
Maybe not in Kentucky. Anyway.
Well, nothing lasts forever. Except this conversation, it seems.
Jeez.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching episode 2 of season 7 of
Face Off!
Ooh, the shouting.
Yeah.
What did you think of today's episode?
I thought it was sort of boring because they didn't do anything new, but I also thought that it was really interesting to see what they were able to make.
For example,
they made a monkey that sort of looked like a lion, with its cool fur around the face like a lion would have for a mane.
Mm-hmm.
And what next?
You tell me.
Yep. So I think that next would be the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which aliens did you like best?
I like Team Laura's aliens because the forehead shape was sort of cool. And I like the color choices. Oh, and the older alien, they made one young and one older. The older one, it was cool because it was like blues and purples on the head, but then it totally changes on the back to greens and yellows and oranges.
And you like that?
Yeah, it was cool.
So who was your very favorite sculpture makeup this week?
Whoever did the older alien.
And who was your least favorite?
Ben.
I don't remember who Ben is. Which one did he do?
He did the hands.
Oh.
The, yeah, I didn't like the hands. Like, the part that he did, it didn't come together.
The hands were terrible.
They were,
wrong.
She's right.
They're really bad.
So
it just didn't work for me.
If you were working on a project like Ben was, and you opened it up and you found that everything was broken, would you try really hard to fix it, or would you leave it and try something different?
Leave it and try something different so that I don't have to waste my time just taking a bunch of time filling up holes, because I also need to do other things too.
It does seem like on Face Off, whenever somebody messes something up and then they try to fix it, that they don't get points for that in the end.
Right. It just looks bad as it wrecked. So what I would do is I would start over.
What if you didn't have time to start over?
Then maybe I could get a partner to help me fix it.
That's a nice idea. Do you want to tell everybody who was the winner this week?
Team Race, but that one person was Logan.
Do you remember what he did? Which sculpture? Sorry, makeup?
I don't remember.
He did, there was one where the body.
Oh, yeah.
And something else.
Yep,
the
nailed it.
Thing, it put it over the top.
Right. And who went home?
Gregory? I forgot how to say it.
That's my spelling. Gregory.
Gregory.
And do you remember what he was responsible for?
The monkey?
Yeah, the monkey that the judges didn't like.
I thought that the monkey was fine, I mean.
You hated the other monkey.
Yeah, it looked like an old woman or like an old witch or something.
I said exactly the same thing when we were watching it, so me and you live simpatico.
It didn't look much like a monkey, but the judges loved it. Why would they love... Well, maybe it looked like a cool monkey to them, but to me, it just looks like an old woman.
If you could land on any of the planets that we saw the makeups from today, which planet would you want to land on?
The planet that Team Laura's did. I would like to meet them. And their monkey was cool, too.
Yeah. Who do you think acts more like a monkey, Tara or Dave Cole?
Dave Cole.
Why?
Because he's a bit more silly at times.
That's a very safe answer. Thank you for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Wait, but I think I'm a monkey too. I mean, I go crazy sometimes.
That's true, you do.
Okay, bye.
Just a note about her saying Dave Cole. That's we told her that was Dave's name since she was a baby, so she still calls him that even though she's
yeah, like Jordan Catalano.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, I really wanted to see if I can engineer that to make it stick, and it worked. And I think it started off as for some reason I signed a present to her the very first year we had Christmas. Mm-hmm. As Dave Cole, because I just wasn't paying attention, and I looked at it, and I thought, you know what? Let's try to make this
stick.
This
is my name now.
we're gonna do this, and it carried over to Ellie too, which is her Liv's younger sister, and now she just out of habit because she hears it calls me Dave Cole.
Yeah,
so.
Even though she hears other adults call you just Dave, but that doesn't matter. That's not what she calls you.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh God.
All right, everybody, it's time for Bunting versus Bunting, in which we look at the latest episode of Downton Abbey and the exploits of Sarah Bunting on that show and compare it to the real life Sarah D. Bunting.
Miss Bunting here has opened my eyes to a world of knowledge I knew nothing of.
Okay, so two things
happened. And it's all filthy.
two things happened in this episode, I think, worthy of note. One is Bunting continues to teach, Daisy.
They've expanded out from maths, and now they're also learning history as well.
Histories, yeah.
Mm-hmm. and then...
But only revolutions, apparently.
Yeah, right. Surprisingly... Sarah Bunting gets invited again to another Crawley event.
Yeah.
She's been to parties, dinners. She just keeps on getting reinvited to these things, even though every time she gets into it with Lord G.
And by the way, never by Tom either. It's always all the bitches around him that are like, sure, totally bring her. And he's like, okay.
And here's my theory. Are they just really like in it to needle their father / husband? Yeah. Is that really the purpose of all this?
Yeah.
It can't be because they're just giving her like four chances or whatever to,
right?
And it's not out of, I think, extreme kindness to Tom.
Because, I think that is the reason.
You think
that they're that extreme kindness to Tom? Yes. Yeah. I think they're trying to be nice and show they're not snobs.
But at a certain point, you think somebody would just pull Tom aside and say, can you just like invite her but ask her not to say anything this time?
Well, he tried this time when he was walking her in. He was like, remember, I love these people. And yeah, she was like, totally.
But also, I love these people, so you really have to shut up.
I thought it was implied, but Sarah Bunting, unlike Sarah D. Bunting, can't take a hint, even when it's a pretty direct hint.
So explain what happens at the party, please.
So at the party, they're having dinner, and someone mentions, Isabel brings up how her lessons with Daisy are going. She says they're fine. Lord G. says... I think it's fine for her to learn as long as it doesn't, unsettle her, I think is how he puts it. And then Sarah Bunting is like, you don't even know her name, do you? And that's like the beginning of the end of this party, because then Mary has to jump in and be like, of course he knows her name, Daisy. And Sarah Bunting's like, well, he knows it now. And then he's like, I knew it before, which I'm not so sure. So then she rolls her eyes about it, and Lord G makes Carson bring them up. And after that speech that we just heard Daisy say, they leave. And then as soon as she's gone, Lord G is trying to be conciliatory and is like, well, I think it's great. That was a lovely speech. She was certainly nice to you, blah, de, blah. And then Sarah Bunting can't leave well enough alone and is like, I still think you just want us serfs in our place from cradle to grave, which is like probably true also. But at the same time, save it for the car ride home. Don't say it at dinner.
Also, you're eating his food, you jag.
Yes.
Shut up.
Stop showing up if this is what you think of him, you fucking asshole. Like, even
Stop
Mary is
like... Stop having people tweet at me about what a C you are. Get a grip.
Yes. The most hilarious thing about this season, I'm so sorry, Sarah, other than the segment, is reading all the comments. Because everyone's like, refers to her by her full name, Sarah Bunting, every time, and how horrible she is and how much they hate her. And after this episode, it's really hard to take her side. Like, up to a point, and she did try early in the season to be like, you invited me. When Rose invites her over for dinner initially, she's like, thinks it's a joke and doesn't want to go. And now she's like, fuck everything, and just going to show up every time in order to be an asshole about it. And I don't know how this character possibly can come back from this, because this was pretty bad show. Anyone else?
Well, and also, isn't the whole point of her so that, like, isn't Tom supposed to throw her a bone? Isn't that the end game?
I mean, you would think.
Yeah, they've been building up to that for a long time.
I mean, if that's her end game, this is not how you do it. Like, they lingered on him closing his eyes and hoping a trapdoor would open for like 10 minutes. Even
true.
He is like, not Connie.
Right. And again, like I said, he's never the one who invites her. It's always everyone around him. So even he is like, this is not worth the agita. Like, stop it. Stop having her over.
And you know what's crazy to me, too? Like, Lord G slams his napkin onto the table and storms off. And yeah. I love that Carson immediately is like, I'll just sew that for you. But then everyone just changes the subject. Yep. And keeps sitting there like, no, that's not how that works, England. This is why the sun did set on the British Empire. The rest of you are supposed to storm off. Or at least go to another room and talk shit about it.
Seriously. Well, I mean, it was Lord G's mother who changes the subject, so I guess no one felt like they'd be like, no, we're not done talking about this other thing that just happened. But there were a lot of weird unfinished threads to get off Bunting versus Bunting for a second. That Tony's incredibly angry reaction to Mary trying to dump his ass was just like, then yeah. She comes back and is like, well, it was an unpleasant errand in London, but I'm glad it's over. Like, no, it's nothing's over. He's going to blackmail you into marrying him because you fucked him.
Well, and he seemed to be like totally on board with that, like, let's just screw around for a little bit and see if we like each other thing. And now he's acting like, oh no, that was never my plan. Like, mm-hmm. it was totally his plan.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So are we in agreement that Sarah D. Bunting would not do what Sarah Bunting did? Wait, at least not in front of their faces.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Is that the takeaway?
This is the least Sarah D. Bunting-y that Sarah Bunting has ever been.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And I think Sarah D. Bunting would have, after the first two encounters, say, you know, maybe I'll skip this one.
Is that accurate?
If not for their sake, for her sake. I mean, why right. would you want to put yourself through that?
Yes.
I mean, what point could you possibly make that would make you that happy? Right? I mean, like, what would be the equivalent of class struggle? Like, what if you could really string it to somebody, really lay into somebody about a topic?
Yeah.
What would it be, Sarah? What would we be talking? Baseball? Like, really? Like what?
I don't think I would get that mad about it.
Right.
I don't know. Sexism?
Yeah.
But like, am I going to go to a dinner party and start screaming at the biggest sexist I know?
Like Donald Trump invites you to dinner, Sarah, let's say, since you're also covering the Celebrity Apprentice for us this season.
Okay. Do with you so far.
Do you go?
Sure.
But you don't throw a
jersey.
Scene.
I mean, right. why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go.
But you wouldn't be... You would just wait till afterwards to tell everybody else how horrible he had been. You wouldn't say it to his face.
Yeah. Well, yeah. First of all, if I talk to him like that, he's going to fire me from
life.
Dinner.
From dinner.
Yes.
Second of all, he's always bragging about how it's the most luxurious and it's huge. And like, if he's going to roll out the caviar and mm-hmm. the expensive champagne, yeah. I want to stay all the way through
yeah.
to get the good eats because I'm a capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know... I mean, I'd like to talk to the guy and sort of mentally file everything away
yeah.
and or have a GoPro somewhere on my person and
sure.
then rush home and I am about it with you
yes.
versus having a big fight about it because you're not going to change his mind.
Right.
And especially if I were trying to get a leg over, that's mm-hmm. not how you do it.
Right.
At least,
not that you're interested in either of his sons or sons-in-law, but that's beside the point.
Well, right. But if I'm there as sort of like, I'm someone's plus one.
Yeah.
And that yes. someone is someone for whom I have eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. Yeah. I don't know what her game is.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I can't. I'm curious to know where it goes from here.
Okay, it is time for Around the Dial, and we're going to start with Nick.
Okay, so the nightly show with Larry Wilmore has just finished its first week on Comedy Central, and I think I am very pleased with how good it's gotten this quickly. I think he's really settled in as a host, and I like the aspect of the show that's totally different from Daily Show or Colbert, where it is mostly a panel discussion. And it's a panel discussion that manages to be much more interesting and entertaining and less douchey than Real Time with Bill Maher, which has... I don't even watch anymore because he just finds like the most obnoxious people and then he's, you know, kind of an asshole himself. So, but I think, Larry Wilmore has studied that and improved on it greatly. Even from the way they shoot it, which is like several people around a table instead of like three people sitting in a row and always like turning to each other and yelling at each other. So, I think, it's funny and it's, I like that he's focusing on one topic per episode, kind of like how John Oliver's been doing, and I'm really excited to see more of it.
Well, it was a good call. I mean, if that his skill set, it works, because I always thought that the interviews were always the weakest part of Daily Show mm-hmm. and Colbert Report, especially Colbert Report, I thought. And the one thing I, like, some of it is a little, like, here's our format-y, and I don't think they've settled into it. Like, I think the keeping it under, whatever it's called,
mm-hmm.
like... They need to find a middle ground there where it's a little more natural and a little less sort of shticky.
That's the part I actually like the most, other than the weak.
I like
the
concept.
Weak tea,
well, that's what
tea
I mean.
Bag yeah. prop I is like the, wait, you can drop that anytime.
I like the idea that, you know, we're all going to be honest, and here's the question, and boom, just answer it.
Yes, but they need to tighten it up.
Yeah, and also see the ending thing where he gets the question. Like, I like that. It's obvious that he's blind to what the question of the day is going to
yeah.
be. But then when he hums and haws and gives a really lame answer, you're like, well, you know,
then
maybe that
point?
Needs to be tweaked because that
yeah.
didn't really pay off, you know. And so I mean, I do like it a lot. I just, it's going to be great in like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, I feel like I watched the first three this week, and then when the fourth came up on the DVR, I was like, maybe I'm going to check back in with this in a couple months, because I felt like I liked aspects of it, but I felt like he was a bit stiff.
Well, you know, when you have a show like that and it's all new and you have it all plotted out, you know, in your mind, there's a way that you think it's going to go.
Yeah.
And I think what is happening right now is that he's struggling between steering it to what they thought it was going to be and letting it go to what it's going to be.
Right.
Right. And there's always that weird little, and it's the same for like any show, scripted or not, you know, like the creators come in and they have a vision, and then, you know, new writers come in and everything, and things change and ideas pop up, and then, you know, it settles into a flow if it's going to be successful.
I have to give props to the second episode was all about Bill Cosby and Kathleen Madigan. They were talking about the people that are still coming to Bill Cosby shows when he's on tour, like in the middle of all of this controversy and accusations and stuff. And like what you're supposed to do if you're a person that was a fan of Bill Cosby and you bought these tickets months ago, like, do you still go, like, whatever. And Kathleen Madigan, a stand-up comic, was like, well, if, you know, if I buy tickets to go see Stevie Nicks and sometime between then and when the concert is, she eats a baby. Sorry that she ate a baby, but I got to hear Landslide, which I thought was the funniest line of the entire first
that was
week.
Awesome.
Anyway, that's all I had to say. I wanted to talk about Togetherness, which Nick Reinwald-Jones complained about on Twitter last night for, well, I'll let you tell it, Nick. Go ahead.
All right. Well, no, I think it's really good, and I think, and I especially think it's really good as like an LA show that really gets LA right. So that is why I was particularly annoyed when there's a scene that's supposed to take place in Beverly Hills, but was actually just they took a Beverly Hills sign and stuck it on Ventura Boulevard in the San Fernando Valley, about half a mile from my house. So I know exactly where it is, and it was like, come on, either shoot in Beverly Hills or, you know, don't. But like,
was it outside the Beverly Hills Petco at the end of your street?
No, although the funny thing is what they should have done is there's actually a Rodeo Realty right near there on Ventura. So that would have been at least, you know.
A little camouflage.
Yeah, a little camouflage. But yeah, no, otherwise I think it's great. A great show.
It is a great show. I'm really, really loving it. I've not like 100% in the tank for everything that the Duplasses do. It's produced and written by Mark and Jay Duplass. Mark also stars in it. And the third person that created it with them is Steve Zissis, who stars in it as Alex. For me, 100, like, not 100. Most of the reason to watch the show is Amanda Peet, because I love her and I love her performance in this show. She plays like one of the more unsettled characters, although the joke is that they're all unsettled. There's two people who are married, and then, you know, as you watch the show more, you realize that just because they're married doesn't mean they've figured everything out. Shocker. But it's so interesting and great, and so much of it is like just rests on looks, you know. It's like, it's not a very plot heavy show, but there's really like you get a sense of how devastating a moment is just based on tiny reactions from people. It's really subtle and smart, and it is not on this week because of the Super Bowl. The big game, I guess I have to call it officially.
Oh,
however,
I thought that already happened last week.
No, it's on Sunday.
Oh.
So there won't be a new episode this week, which is the perfect time to go back to HBO Go and watch the first three and see what you have missed. And then you can tune back in with episode 4, which will be on February 8th.
Okay, two things quickly. Tara already mentioned my first pick, which is Wolf Hall, which you can currently see if you fly to England or through Methods.
Yep.
It is the Cromwell history.
Based on the books by Hilary Mantel.
Yes. And Tara, I had a question for you because it came up in Twitter.
Yes.
The lead, whose name is?
Mark Rylance.
Okay, so what
plays
is he?
Thomas Cromwell, not Oliver Cromwell, the Cromwell you've heard of.
Right. Not the Monty Python.
Not James
song.
Cromwell.
Not James Cromwell. Not James Cromwell. Cromwell. Alas.
No. And not Snackwell. the early aughts diet food everybody's eating. Okay, so what else has that actor been in that everybody was so surprised that he wasn't chewing scenery left and
not
right?
Not everybody. Adam Grossworth, our guest of last week. He's a stage actor mostly. So he's been in a lot of plays in New York where I guess he is very scenery chewy. I've never seen him on stage, I don't know.
Okay.
He's been in I think he's from the movie Angels and Insects. That's the only thing I've maybe ever seen him in before this.
I really dig in this series. It's, they're two episodes in.
Yeah, the next one doesn't air until next week. in England.
It really is a who's that cast. It's great. Just chock full of character actors.
Damian Lewis plays Henry VIII. Yep. So that's kind of awesome.
Mycroft from Sherlock plays one of his skeevy advisor, inner circle guys.
Jonathan Pryce is Cardinal Wolsey.
And it's, you know, it's sort of, it's like a slow burn, very English Henry, King Henry, House of Cards.
Totally, yes. That's a great, except not as campy.
Right.
It's more straight faced. Yeah, more English.
Yeah, but it's, boy, does it scratch an itch I didn't know I had. And I'm really digging it. Jonathan Pryce is great in it. I really enjoyed his Cardinal Wolsey. And
there's a bunch of Game really of Thrones great. People
it's
in it.
It's really, you know, it's all very dark and everything seems cold. And it's one of the most British looking things. I've seen it in a while. Really digging it. Wolf Hall. What's it airing on? Do you know what
BBC
network?
Two.
Okay.
And if you like Adam Grossworth are anti Mark Rylance because you feel like he's an overactor, he's not in this to me at all. He's like the quietest guy in every scene.
He is.
Including when horrible tragedies befall him, which I won't spoil if you're going to watch it, but bad things happen to him in the first episode.
And my other one is Better Call Saul, which we've seen the first two episodes here.
On screeners.
Yeah, in advance. I would say the premiere, if you were sort of imagining what the premiere would be, you're probably pretty close. You know, it's a bit of an origin story. You know, some of the characters that you're familiar with that intersected with Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad appear. And you kind of see sort of a proto Saul Goodman and sort of what's going to happen to him to make him that person, that persona. And the second half of the second, I mean, sorry, the first half of the second episode is really, really great. I don't want to spoil it at all, but it just involves that character doing lawyerly things outside of the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a negotiation of sorts.
Yeah, it's directed by Michelle McLaren, who directed some of the best Breaking Bad episodes, mm-hmm. and it feels the most Breaking Bad-y.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I mean, it's not going to be as good as Breaking Bad.
No, but... and I tweeted this last night after we watched it, but there was a review that was going around last week from Esquire where some person said that it was better than Breaking Bad, which
really?
Is insane.
No,
that's... It's insane.
It's good. It's a good
very
show.
Good show.
Yeah.
But you really... I mean, obviously, you have someone's going to make the comparison, but it's not close. But
and
it's still
also
very good.
Different show.
It feels more like Fargo to me.
Yeah, fair.
I mean,
okay,
and Breaking,
now you got me.
Yeah, Breaking Bad had like Fargo-y moments. I think the tone of both of those was similarly like, you know, hapless comedic moments would careen right into like horrible violence and tragedy. And there's some of that in Better Call Saul too, although in general it's lighter.
Mm-hmm. And there's Bob Odenkirk in both of those.
And there's Bob Odenkirk in both of them, and Julianne Emery, who is also in both of them, weirdly. Yeah. She was the widow of the first police chief in Fargo. It's good. The first episode airs on February 8th on AMC, and then it's the second half of that episode is the next night, and that's its normal time slot on Mondays.
Do you think the credits we saw are the final credits?
Yes.
Okay.
They're it's an interesting style choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And Sarah, bring us home.
Much as Badlands is the Terrence Malick movie for people who can't stand Terrence Malick, Restaurant Startup is the Joe Bastianich property for people who can't stand Joe Bastianich. Apparently he has quit MasterChef, so that's sort of irrelevant. But mm-hmm. Restaurant Startup is now on episode, I believe episode 3 will be airing this week of its second season. They didn't change much from the first season, except that they made the sort of in startup advisor when they're, you know, they get the $7,500 to do their LA pop-up. They changed the advisor lady to Antonia from Top Chef. Mm. She's way more on point and has more relevant experience, I think, than the previous lady whose name I've already forgotten. She had beautiful extensions. That's all I remember. but it's still like, there's still stuff they do that I don't understand. And that's sort of pointless, but my conclusion, and I am not a crackpot, is I think someone should do a like 10 or 12 episode documentary show just following Joe Bastianich opening a restaurant, because
yeah,
he's pretty good at it, just ask him. And I think it would be a lot I think it wouldn't call on him to be this like contrived sort of, you know, camera friendly or friendly at all guy. Like, he's so awkward on MasterChef Junior, and you're mm-hmm. just like, what is the opposite of this? Have him do that.
Yeah. I like it.
Oh, we're done. Okay, that means it is time for the canon. And Nick, you have brought something, and you've brought something a little familiar.
I have. This is season 6, episode 7 of Gilmore Girls, entitled 21 is the Loneliest Number. I know I'm going back to the Gilmore Girls well pretty quickly. It was just two appearances ago that I submitted an episode from season 1, which was entitled Rory's Birthday Parties. And this episode is a really great bookend to that episode, so that's kind of why I'm submitting it. And I think just these two episodes side by side are a great microcosm for all the ways that the characters and relationships on the show evolved over the years. A little backstory before we start. Around the end of season 5 and beginning of season 6, the show dropped two huge major developments on us. One of those developments was long awaited, and that was Lorelai and Luke getting engaged, except it was Lorelai who asked Luke to marry her. The other huge development was that Rory decided to drop out of Yale and move in with her grandparents, and that was such a huge blow to Lorelai that she and Rory haven't been speaking with each other for the first several episodes of the season. The episode before this one ends with Richard coming to see Lorelai, ostensibly to drop off her childhood dollhouse, but really because he wants to share his concerns about Rory at this point. He'd assumed that she would be ready to go back to Yale by now, but she's showing no signs of that, and he's really getting worried. But he thinks he has a plan to convince Rory to get back on track, which he lays out in our first clip.
We can fix this. First of all, I can change the terms of Rory's trust fund. Currently, she's set to receive it when she turns 25. But I say we tell her it's contingent on her returning to Yale.
Dad.
Or we can use the opposite approach if you think it's better. Maybe we offer her a car. Or the down payment on a townhouse. Or I'll buy her the townhouse. Don't you see? If there's something in it for her, maybe we can get her to change her mind.
Thank you for the dollhouse, Dad. It's greatly appreciated.
I don't believe this. Aren't you listening to me?
No.
Lorelai, Rory is turning 21 years old in 10 days. Do you realize that?
Yes, Dad, I realize it.
She's 21! That's not a child. 21-year-olds need to be working towards something.
Rory will figure it out.
Oh, please, she's 21. I couldn't tie my shoe at 21.
Well, Rory's advanced. She had the shoe thing down at 3.
I'm getting a little tired.
Getting a little tired of this conversation. I'm not interested in your plan. I'm not going to bribe my daughter with cars and money, mainly because it wouldn't work. And if you'd ever met Rory, you would know it wouldn't work. Rory can't be bought, and I'm not going to try and buy her. I want Rory to want to go back to school. She used to love to learn and read and study, and that was freakish, but it was her, and she's got to get herself back there.
But
no, when Rory wants help, she will ask for it. And the minute she does, I will fly in faster than the Gulf Stream I'm sure you're going to offer to buy her next. But until then, I'm sorry, you're on your own.
Impossible girl.
My Native American name, I believe.
And this is essentially the same thing that Lorelai and her parents were arguing about way back in that season 1 episode. They think that they know what's best for Rory, and they're trying to take control of her away from Lorelai. But they were doing it much more subtly in the first season, and now circumstances are such that they're basically functioning as her parents for the time being. But lo and behold, it turns out that they suck at that, and Lorelai is rightfully pissed off that Richard wants to enlist her in their plan to get her back to Yale. In the next scene, Lorelai is ranting to Luke about her debate with her father, and then she talks wistfully about this whole plan that she and Rory had for Rory's 21st birthday, which we will hear in this clip.
We were going to go to Atlantic City. We were going to sit at a blackjack table at 11:59. We were going to order martinis, and we were going to be playing 21 when she turned 21. And then hopefully we'd win, and we'd take our winnings, and we'd buy 21 things. And then there was a thing about 21 guys that wouldn't really be appropriate anymore since the engagement. But it was a good plan. She probably doesn't even remember the plan.
She remembers the plan.
And it wasn't like we talked about it every day. It was just something we thought of.
She remembers the plan.
From there, we cut to Rory in bed, but she's in her childhood bedroom with a fuzzy pink clock, and then Madeleine Albright climbs into bed with her. So, yeah, dream sequence. And a dream sequence that nicely shows off Gilmore Girls' unique approach to stunt casting.
Yep.
Not movie stars, political people. Anyway, this scene is an exact replica of the scene in the season one episode when Lorelai got into bed with Rory in the very early morning to recite her yearly story about Rory's birth. And Madeleine Albright does that whole speech verbatim all in one take. I'd say she pretty much nails it for a non-actor. And which is also kind of great, there's absolutely zero screen time devoted to analyzing the dream. Why was it Madeleine Albright? What does she represent? Blah, blah, blah. There's none of that. It's just a dream, and sometimes dreams are weird. We cut to the pool house. Rory and Logan are making out on the couch, and Emily knocks on the door to tell them that she wants to throw Rory a big 21st birthday bash and invite all Rory's friends, the DIR ladies that Rory's been working with, and so forth. Afterwards, Rory admits to Logan that she's really not into this particular birthday because she knows she won't be celebrating it with Lorelai the way they'd planned. And then she shows that she does remember the plan. She rattles off the exact same scenario that Lorelai described before. The next morning, Emily is talking to Rory excitedly about all the details of planning the birthday party. She's having her taste different cakes and look over invitations, and Rory is very unengaged in all this, but she does snap to attention when Emily asks if they should invite Lorelai, and Rory decides that, yes, she would like to invite her. Speaking of Lorelai, she comes home that night and sees Babette and Maury's frighteningly realistic Halloween display. this episode takes place right before Halloween. And she suddenly decides that she wants to have her own Halloween gore fest to scare and delight the kids. And she tells Luke that she wants to involve him, strap him to a gurney, pretend to cut him open and pull sausages out of him, spray him with fake blood and all that. And Luke just shuts that down right away. He's definitely not letting her do any of that to him. We cut to Logan dropping Rory off at Emily and Richard's, and they're saying their kissy face goodbye in the car when Richard suddenly knocks on the window and interrupts them. He goes back inside and tells Emily what he saw, and that leads us into this clip.
You know, Richard, Rory's growing up.
Mm-hmm.
She's turning 21 next week.
Oh, is that what the flotilla of party planners outside our door was about?
Logan is certainly a very experienced young man.
Man of the world, Emily, man of the world.
You know, Richard, it might be that time.
What time?
She might be getting ready to have relations with that boy.
Oh, Emily, please. Have you seen the size of that sports car of his? There's no room to cross your legs, much less anything else.
The car is not the only place they're getting affectionate, Richard. I walked in on them the other day in the pool house. They were very cozy on the couch, and they certainly weren't looking for her keys.
Do you really think?
I really think.
Well, we have to do something. If she's getting ready to take that step, we have to do something.
I couldn't agree more.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I totally thought that, well, on a dirtier version of this show, the follow-up to the line about Logan having the giant sports car would be, that boy clearly has no penis.
Oh, I thought you were going to say what Richard would say after, there's no room to even cross your legs, never mind anything else.
Yeah, well, it's still pretty good.
Yes.
The next day, Lorelai gets the invitation to Rory's party, but she thinks it's just more of her parents trying to manipulate her. She has no idea that Rory really wants her there, so she just shrugs it off, and she continues to be sad about missing out on Rory's 21st birthday. And then that night, the planning that Emily and Richard were discussing pays off, and Rory shows up to a fancy home-cooked dinner with Richard and Emily and finds out that they've also invited their local minister, the Reverend Boatwright. I will say no more about this. Let us just hear the clip.
It's amazing. All the wonderful foods in this world, the greatest chefs with the most exotic ingredients, and yet this girl still wants pot roast. Roll, Reverend?
Well, thank you. Don't mind if I do.
Hmm. I wonder where that salad is. Will you excuse me? I'll be right back.
You know, Emily ordered some of that wonderful Irish butter. You haven't tasted rolls until you've had them with Irish butter. I'll be right back.
And then there were two.
Your grandparents have told me a lot about you, Rory.
Oh, yeah?
They're very proud of you, you know.
Well, then it's a mutual admiration society.
You have a birthday coming up next week?
21st.
Must be wonderful being a young woman just turning 21. The world is out there just waiting to be conquered.
I guess so.
I hear you have a boyfriend.
Yes.
Ah, young love. It can be so exhilarating, so intense. All those feelings rushing around inside of you. I remember being young and having all those crazy feelings.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. You know, Rory, being a young lady comes with many gifts. Your virtue, for example, is a gift. A precious gift. Possibly the most precious gift you possess.
Uh-huh.
You want to give this gift very carefully. It is a gift you can give to only one man. Once you give it, it's gone. You can't re-gift it. If you give it away too soon to the wrong man, then when the right one does come along, you have no gift to give. You'll have to buy him a sweater. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No.
Think long and hard about when and to whom you want to give the ultimate gift you have to give away.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear indeed.
Well, listen, Reverend... I really appreciate you taking the time out of what I assume is a busy day to come here and talk to me about all of this. But I'm afraid the ultimate gift ship has sailed.
What?
A while ago. It's probably in Fiji by now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
So, have you seen The 40-Year-Old Virgin? Because you might like it.
If I'm going to be honest, this scene is really what compelled me to submit this for the canon. I wish it were a video podcast because Alexis Bledel's face acting was so genius here. I mean, God knows she's not always the most expressive actress, but she really kills it this time. And it's also just a great character scene for Richard and Emily because we see that they're so emotionally useless that they're even willing to outsource the capital T talk. And also, I mean, let's be honest, they are not the kind of people that are religious. Like, they probably go to church on Christmas and Easter, and yet they have this minister ready to talk to her about sex. You know, it's a good illustration of why I think this whole storyline of Rory breaking away from Lorelai and living with her grandparents, even though it was risky, it really paid off because we got to see firsthand what it was like for Lorelai to grow up in that environment and why it would have damaged her so much. And there is really no way other than this to demonstrate that. They tried it once with a flashback episode in season 3 and it didn't work at all. And thankfully they never tried that again. But this really ended up being the perfect way for both the audience and Rory to understand what Lorelai went through. So the next day, Rory comes back from one of her many community service volunteer jobs to find that the pool house is stuffed to the gills with party rental equipment, and she asks Emily what's going on. Emily tells her that for the next few days, Rory will be sleeping upstairs in the room right next to Richard and Emily's. So they've shut down her sexcapades for the time being. And then she checks the invitation list and sees that Lorelai still has not RSVP'd to the party, so she follows up by calling Luke and asking him to relay a message to Lorelai, and that is our next clip.
Luke's.
Luke, is my mother there?
Rory?
Rory?
Yes, it's Rory. Is my mother there?
That's Rory?
I'll give her to you.
To me? That's Rory for me?
No, I just want to know if she's coming to my birthday party.
She wants to know if you're coming to her birthday party.
What?
We're making the chocolate boxes right now, and I need to know if she's coming so I know whether or not to make her one.
They're making the chocolate boxes right now, and she needs to know if you're coming so they can make you one.
I didn't know I was invited.
I sent her an invitation. Where the hell did she think it came from, the invitation fairy?
She said she sent you an invitation.
Well, I didn't know it was from her. I didn't know it was from you.
Well, it was. Is she coming or not?
Are you coming or not?
Yes, I'm coming. I want a chocolate box.
She'll be there.
Fine. Bye.
Rory called.
I know. She called and yelled at me.
No, she called and yelled at me.
Yeah, but I'm the one who had to hear it, and she was loud. And she said, hell, I never heard her say hell. I didn't even know she knew how to say hell. She was mad, and she yelled, and she said hell.
Yeah, but she called.
And then after this, there's a quick, sad little scene where both Rory and Lorelai are lying in their beds at 4:03 a.m., which is the exact minute of Rory's birthday, as we established way back in the season 1 episode. And we cut to the party, and guests are arriving. Emily's running around and wondering where Richard is, and then Rory comes downstairs in her party dress, which is very Emily Gilmore conservative. And Emily shows her the signature cocktail for her party. It's called the Rory, and it is made of champagne, vodka, pineapple juice, and grenadine.
Even I know that sounds disgusting.
Yeah. I will say that is a drink that no one over the age of 11 should be drinking, probably with a handful of pink foil-wrapped Hershey Kisses. But I think that Luke does a very good job of summing up the disgustingness of the concoction in the next clip.
I see you have a Rory. I see you have a Rory.
Sorry.
Excuse me?
Your drink. It's called a Rory. What's the matter, Luke? You don't like your Rory?
Oh, no. It's great. It's a little pink, you know.
Well, Rory's a girl. Girls like pink.
I know. I was just saying.
No one's asking you to wear it. It's not a skirt.
I know. I just...
Drink the drink.
Well, nice of you two to come. I have some things to check on. We'll catch up later. Excuse me.
It tasted pink.
She's gone.
I mean, like, really tasted really pink. Like, pink pink. Ugh.
Come on, let's get something to eat.
God, that's terrible. It's like drinking a My Little Pony.
Oh boy. Yeah, so we see Rory greeting all our guests, Lane, Zach, Paris, and Doyle, and it's a great moment when Zach meets Logan for the first time and he just says, oh, so you're like rich, huh? And then there's a good tidbit with Paris and Doyle where we hear that Paris is taking over the editor-in-chief spot of the Yale Daily News, and she says, last year I was sleeping with the editor, and Doyle says, and this year I am. And of course, it's a well-rehearsed bit that they're repeating over and over again throughout the night, perfecting. And then while Rory is talking to them, Lorelai comes over and she and Rory exchange an awkward hello. Lorelai is very clearly happy to see her, but she doesn't really know how to talk to her. And Rory ends up excusing herself quickly to kind of make the rounds. A little while later, Lorelai and Luke are outside. Lorelai has a perfect rant about overly sweet cocktails and how they make you sick and give you hangovers. That is very good advice. This show knows what it's talking about when it comes to booze.
I was thinking that was the reason that you submitted this one to the canon, all the booze talk.
Among many reasons, yeah. Mm-hmm. It definitely hits all of my buttons. And then two of the old ladies that Rory works with at the DAR come over to introduce themselves, which is our next clip.
Vivian Lewis, and this is Catherine Thurston Moore. We're friends of Rory's from the DAR.
Oh, friends of Rory's. Wow, I didn't realize she ran with the bad girls.
We just wanted to tell you we love Rory. She introduced us to buffalo wings and jalapeno poppers, and for that we will be eternally grateful.
What's a DAR? I'm going to get a beer. Anyone want anything?
I'm good.
Okay, I'll be back.
And then Luke goes inside, he sees Rory, and he gives her a very sweet present, an heirloom necklace, and then yet another DAR lady overhears their conversation, and let's hear that clip.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's from Luke, my stepfather-to-be.
Well, you have exquisite taste, Luke. I'm Tweeny Halpern.
Tweeny works with me at the DAR.
What's the DAR? I'm killing with that line tonight.
I'm with you, Luke. I grew up in Massachusetts. When I was in fifth grade, I won an essay contest sponsored by the DAR. I still have no idea what the hell it is. old rich white ladies, I guess that's about it.
Which probably works too.
Yeah.
What is it? Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yeah, so it's basically if you're speaking, super, super white.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Descendants of American service people kind of get jumped in. So.
Hey, you want to hear something very troubling now? Is that my family are, what is it called?
United Empire Loyalists. Oh, no.
Which is basically the other side of Ontario. Yeah. Well,
slash Britain.
Well, it's made of people that left America because America was full of DARs.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah.
This explains your long
simmering.
So is
this the Welsh terrorism cell?
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Nick.
Oh, that's good.
So Richard still has not come out of his office. Lorelai goes in to check on him. He's sitting there drinking alone, doesn't want to talk to anybody because he's too depressed about what's going on with Rory. Although his depression is kind of entertaining, as we'll hear in this clip.
I cleared the path for her to walk away from her goal, her life.
Dad.
She's having sex, Lorelai. She's having sex under my roof. I paid $40,000 to redecorate her sex house. I bought her sex mattress. Her sex box springs. I provided everything she needs to waste her life.
Dad, Rory having sex is not your fault. Really, she was having sex way before the big renovation.
I feel so much better now.
Sorry. I wasn't trying to...
I made a terrible, terrible mistake.
My band Sex Box Springs will be playing at the Echoplex tomorrow night. Come on down, 9 p.m. Finally, Rory and Lorelai do get their minute alone, and it's civil, but it's still awkward. And Lorelai tells her that her drink is disgusting. Rory agrees. And they catch up a little just as the ice is starting to melt between them. Rory gets whisked off by her friends for the cake cutting and the singing of Happy Birthday, and Lorelai just stands in the background, once again feeling like she's completely outside of Rory's world. She asks Luke if they can go home, and then in the car, Luke tries to cheer her up by saying that she can pull Link sausages out of him if she wants, of course, alluding to Lorelai's over-the-top Halloween idea that he'd shot down before. One of Luke's sweeter moments, I would say. And the end. So, like I said, I think this episode makes a great pairing with that other season one episode, Rory's Birthday Parties. And there's some very conscious references to that episode in this one. And it's a great example of the show's, I guess, for lack of a better term, institutional memory. It really stayed solid and consistent with the characters over a long period of time. And just like in real life, the problems that existed at the beginning of the series never really got solved in the long run. They just manifested differently. And here we do see the same issues and versions of the same arguments that we saw between Lorelai and her parents in that much earlier episode, except that now those same issues are starting to sprout up between Lorelai and Rory, in spite of how hard Lorelai has worked to prevent that from happening. I think season 6 on the whole is one of the strongest seasons of Gilmore Girls because it really honed in on that whole dynamic. And like I said, it made the big choice of creating a rift between Lorelai and Rory, which we initially would have thought could never happen. But because of going there, the show was able to mine some really potent material, but also without veering into melodrama, which could easily have happened. And I think this particular episode really showcases those strengths. And aside from that, it's also really, really funny. And I promise I'm done submitting Gilmore Girls episodes after this one, provided that we voted into the canon. So please do that so I can shut up.
I feel like our DAR member should start us off.
The canon is always a sort of a tension between, like, is it a good episode of anything? Like, is it just a good half hour, hour of TV? And is it typical of the show that it represents? So I was hoping to go last because when a show is submitted that I don't like, I'm always hoping to see what other people say about how typical it is.
Well, we can switch then.
No, I don't have that much.
Here comes Sarah Bunting Raw.
Yeah, it's just not for me, this show. And this episode actually was fairly typical of why. The Halloween decorations with the neighbors and all that sort of Stars Hollow-y stuff. This is Alexis Bledel at her, like, just worse. Like, yeah. I just was not convinced by anything she was saying. I kind of wasn't buying that Luke and Lorelai are engaged or even really knew each other before they started shooting. Like, apparently there was some like infamous, like they hated each other.
That was the rumor.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Supposedly Scott Patterson is not that great of a guy in real life.
Yeah. It shows. And I, not that great of an actor either. And I was watching part of the episode with my sister-in-law and she's like, where did they shoot this? The grotto? Like, it looks like shit. It was nice to see Edward Herrmann again, and I found his scenes quite touching because I really felt like he wasn't... Other characters or other actors seemed to be a little bit on autopilot with what their characters would be doing, and he was, like, listening more and was very sincere.
He also reminds me of your dad in wonderful ways.
Yeah, he... Yeah, kind of.
He also has heightened senses because he's the head vampire.
That's true.
Rest in peace, Mr. Herman.
That's true. And was sort of the villain in Overboard, one of my favorite Poppy Fields movies. I mean, I chuckled a couple of times, but it was interesting hearing Nick actually talk about it and talking about the institutional memory of the show and the callbacks to the previous episode that I don't remember if it got in or how I voted, but...
You voted for it.
It did get in, and you did vote for it.
All right, well...
Maybe because I was so convincing, because I think that time I went first.
Yeah, well, and it's I think last time I was like, this isn't for me, but I was convinced that that episode was, like, typical of the show in a good way, and this just, like, everything that was, like, right on the border of twee, that first episode we considered is way, way over the line now for me. Tara, you can convince me otherwise. Go.
Cracks knuckles. I'll try. I agree with everything you said, especially the Luke and Lorelai stuff. It must be because the rumors about Scott Patterson not being a very good guy are true, because Luke and Lorelai definitely had more chemistry at the start of the series than they did by the end. And that was definitely true here. The other weak point of the show always, and Nick alluded to this too, is the non-expressiveness of Alexis Bledel, particularly in romantic scenes, which she is terrible at. She is the worst fake kisser on TV ever. Like, I don't want to ever see her.
She uses the top of her head.
Mouth. She's so strange.
She cramps the top of her head and somebody else's lips.
Very strange.
Hugging. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. She's very physically awkward. And all the stuff, all the comedy stuff, like, Sarah's not wrong. All of that said, the parts that work for me work so well. And I love the phrase institutional memory, because it's true. And that I like the symmetry of, like, pairing this episode with the last one you submitted, because, again, it foregrounds all of the stuff between our four main characters, Richard and Emily and Rory and Lorelai, and at this crisis point when everyone is not sure how to proceed, and the stuff with Lorelai and Rory, like, both clearly wanting to get over this fight and neither of them really knowing how, is so powerful to me. And, like, the phone call was really great, and the moment where they see each other for the first time is played perfectly by both of them, I think, where they, you know, there's, like, relief and happiness and joy and awkwardness and all of that, like, happening in seconds. And also the stuff with Richard finally realizing that he's been wrong about how to approach the Rory problem, not just because of the sextant aspect of all of it, but because he wanted things for her that he knows she also wants. It's like what Lorelai says at the beginning, you know, she always used to love to learn. She needs to figure that out again. And Emily not being on the same page as the two of them. And the three of them have kind of a fight about it, where she thinks Rory's fine as long as she's not fucking. Like, if she can continue being in the DAR as far as Emily is concerned, because that's, like, Rory's life co-signing all of Emily's choices, whereas, you know, Lorelai and Richard know Rory can't be Emily too. Like, that's not going to be the right decision for her. And that this is her, all of the acting out that she's done is part of a bigger crisis that they don't know how to solve because she's always been so together before. And when Emily ends that fight with, you know, we haven't failed until she comes home pregnant, it's like, well, that's it. Like, Lorelai's reaction to that is perfect because it's like, that's always, like you said, that's the wound that's underlying this family and is still, you know, literally 21 years later, still hasn't been healed. And like, to me, that's the strongest stuff of the show. So even as much as all of that other stuff doesn't work, that works great for me in this submission. And I also didn't hear until you played the clip that they even snuck in a Thurston Moore joke, because I missed it when we rewatched it the first time, but that one of the DAR's ladies is named something Thurston Moore is funny. Although I'm sure now that things have ended between him and Kim Gordon, Amy Sherman-Palladino wishes she could go back and take it out. Dave.
Sarah, I totally understand your reaction to the tweeness of the show, but I will say that, like, the show is sort of built on that. So I think if you're sort of, you know, grading on a curve, I would say the points in which the twee is more sweet than saccharine work. And usually the show doesn't go very saccharine. You know what I mean? Like, it's, as Tara was saying, like, it's all rings true for the most part when the mother and
the
daughter
real family
relationship
stuff is real to me.
But here's my problem with this episode, where I kind of like it falls apart at its base, which is I really don't believe the senior Gilmores are going to have this weird, naive Puritan reaction to Rory having sex.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, I didn't buy that either. Yeah.
Given that their daughter, like, this is the basis for the whole...
Right, but Rory is like their perfect angel child.
I don't buy it. I don't believe they would be so hands-off when it came down to it, given how the consequences and their disappointment with Lorelai and when she had Rory. Like,
yeah, I can't imagine Emily. I mean, the fact that they haven't figured out that she's almost 21 and that horse is so far clear of the barn, it's in another county, like Rory said. That Emily wouldn't just be like, no fucking in our house. You know, having seen all of three episodes of the show in my life, I didn't buy that from a character standpoint, that she wouldn't just be like, yeah, nah.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that sets up the fact that, you know, the Lorelai and Rory have to, you know, figure out their own way to heal, you know, this schism that's between them. But the fact that this whole she's living with them, what was the impetus for that? I know you were saying, like, she dropped out of Yale, but, like, what was the actual,
so,
like, how
well,
was
the reason
handled?
That she dropped out of Yale is because she had this newspaper internship with Logan's father, who is like the biggest newspaper magnate in America. And
they're supposed to be the Salzburgers. Their name is Huntsburger.
Yeah. And he basically told Rory, you don't have what it takes to make it in the newspaper business. And that just like crushed all of Rory's dreams so much that she was like, maybe just fuck all this and I'm dropping out of Yale. And when that happened, Lorelai was like, no, you need to go back. Right. And she went to the grandparents and was like, we need to talk her into going back. And at first they're like, yeah, we'll help you. But then Rory goes to them and she's like, I need your help because I really need to drop out of Yale. And then they just cave and let her do it and let her live with them in the pool house while she just, you know, figures shit out. And Lorelai can't believe that, like, both of them would betray her like that. And so
and kind of me either. Like, I don't think that it doesn't seem like it's in their DNA either. I mean, I think, like, if they're so driven and, you know, the measure of you know, success of one's life is success in your career. I don't know. There's some points of this episode that seem convenient when it comes to the decisions of the elder Gilmores, which I kind of don't buy. I do like a lot of parts of this episode. I'm totally with whoever said, like, it doesn't seem like Lorelai and Luke are really know each other at this point. And it kind of just feels a bit off. You know, if we're comparing these as bookends, I really like the first part a lot, as we said when it came around. But this one just sort of feels like, you know, like it's a pop can that's been open for a while and it just feels kind of flat to me. in comparison. So thumbs up for the first half. And, you know, this one is fine, but I wouldn't put it up in the canon.
Well, Nick, I tried. I vote yes, but I think I'm alone.
And Sarah?
Here, Paul Anka, Mama's got your broccoli. That was kind of the point at which I couldn't. Tara did try. I considered it. Got to vote no. I'm really sorry. Well,
Gilmore Girls, season 6, episode 7, 21 is a loneliest number. Sorry, you are not inducted into the extra hot great canon. So that means another Gilmore Girls submission is in our future. If I'm reading the tea leaves,
I'm going to convince Sarah with the other one I have in mind. So I need to back
wait till I'm off for the week.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for winner and losers of the week. Sarah has our winner.
I do. Serially fans are winners this week because Studio Lambert and All Three Media are teaming with Detective James Tranum, who, if you listen to Serial, you will remember served as a consultant on that podcast. It'll be a real-time crime investigation series called True Conviction. So it's basically like the TV version of Serial. This production company is also involved with True Tory, so this could go pear-shaped in a fairly serious way. But I, for one, am pretty excited to see what ends up happening.
Wow, that is the buntiest bunt nip ever.
I know, it really is. I'm rolling around in it like it's a patch. Tara.
Loser of the week is Mike Huckabee, who made the weird decision to go on The Daily Show last Monday and shit on Beyonce. I mean, he didn't bring it up, to be fair. Jon Stewart did, but it was off something that was in Mike Huckabee's latest Please Take Me Seriously as a Presidential Contender book, where he basically called Beyonce a whore. Not in so many words, but essentially it was like, she's a bad role model and girls should aspire to more. And she's so talented, concern troll, that she should not do all this sexualized stuff. Like, I don't know who's going to vote for you after you shit on Beyonce, but good luck with that.
Guys, you know what time it is. It's game time. So over it. Okay. So this is what happened. We started to play one game. It was way too fucking hard. Nobody's getting anything right and just wasn't working. So even though it was a well-constructed game, I had to call an audible and proceed to the next game. And I had to do a lot of cold reading and that didn't work out too well. And I had format problems and this and that and everything went wrong. So here we are. We're going to do it again.
Yep.
We're going to toss out those questions you already heard.
Yes.
We're three questions down.
Yep.
So instead of 39 questions, we now got 36.
Yep.
Everybody, we are playing Meet Cute.
Yep.
Meet Cute, which was originally going to be a Valentine's Day-ish episode, but now it's today's episode.
So if you've been sitting on any kind of romantic game time ideas, submit them now because it'll probably get used before Valentine's Day.
All right. So this is the fourth game time of the season. Standings are Tara 2, Sarah 1, Guests 1. Today we are playing Meet Cute, as I said, from Pizza
Carrie,
thank you. Don't have the information in front of me. Yep. I always forget. Who earns herself an extra credit? Redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of her choosing, and so does the person before this, of course, that we didn't hear.
Yep.
All right, so this is how it's going to play. I mean, this is how it's going to work. I am going to read you a meet cute scenario. It is from the point of view of a character from television. You're going to name the show. There is a hint that you can ask for, and that is one of the actors involved in this meet cute scenario. 2 points for it without a hint. 1 point after the hint. Make sense?
And if we guess, do we still get the hint, or once we guess,
nope.
It's burnt?
Yeah, it's burnt.
Okay.
It's burnt.
Got it.
So, all right. So
proceed.
Let's throw it to Picky.
We will start with Tara.
All right.
Okay.
Tara, then Nick, then Sarah. Are we ready once again?
For the forever. Last time.
Yes.
Yep.
To
yes.
play Meet Cute.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So ready.
I'm ready to meet cute with this game.
Yeah. Tara.
Yes.
When my friend stood me up, he was the bartender I went home with and who ended up fathering my baby and eventually becoming my husband.
Hint.
All right. Cynthia Nixon.
Sex and the City.
Correct.
Okay.
All right, Nick.
For 1 point.
I tempt in the legal department he worked in, but his Republican ideals turned me off. Years later, we reconnected at my mother's funeral.
Huh. Hint?
Chris Messina is an actor involved here. Chris Messina.
I had damages?
6 feet under.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, here's your first one, Sarah.
Yes.
After recovering from dental surgery, I discovered an entry for future husband in my phone, which led me to him. Thankfully, I ended up with a man who shares a name with a different 90s icon.
Hint.
Michael Sheen. Michael Sheen. Of course, who we all know from Underworld. Mm-hmm. Right,
it's a very vampire-y, non-vampire episode we're having.
Any idea?
Masters of Sex.
Sure.
I wish that was true.
Tara.
It's 30 Rock.
It's 30 Rock. All right, Tara, here's your second.
Yep.
I was sent to investigate a rival high school in preparation for a competition. We're always going to competitions. And ended up falling for him.
Glee?
That was a good guess, and that's worth 2 points. We're talking about Chris Colton.
Always going to competitions.
Yeah. All right, Nick. I repeatedly called his office to complain about a pothole in front of my house. One day he showed up to fix it himself, even though he was the director of the department.
Oh, Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, yes. We're talking about Lucy Lawless's character and...
Nick Offerman.
Yeah, Nick Offerman. Okay. Back to to Sarah.
Sarah.
I was called in to investigate her for the murder of her parents. Later, I helped her escape from a mental institution.
Wow. Escape from a mental institution. Hint.
Ruth Wilson. Ruth Wilson.
Luther?
Nice.
That's good. Ruther? 4 point. Yep, Ruther.
AKA Mouthface is somebody that I follow on Twitter called her after she won the Golden Globe.
Mouthface.
Mouthface won?
Mouthface.
All right, so now we're back to Tara.
Yep.
He's my father's third cousin, once removed, and came to our estate to claim his inheritance.
I'm just going to take a stab that this is Game of Thrones. Damn.
Wow, couldn't be further from it.
What is it?
Actor involved, Dan Stevens.
Oh, right.
Downton Abbey.
I don't know that that's further from Game of Thrones.
It could have been further. It could have been like Central Park West or something.
Could have been Community.
Let me say this. They're not as polite on Game of Thrones about this.
That's true.
Okay. Nick.
Yep.
I pitched her a pilot about nothing with my best friend.
Seinfeld.
Correct. Nice. All right. Sarah.
Yep.
I visited Duluth in search of answers about a crime and learned he had let the bad guy simply drive away.
Fargo.
Fargo, 2 points.
Nice.
All right, Nick. That means Tara.
Yes.
I met her at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting I was attending in order to find new people to whom I could sell.
Breaking Bad.
Correct.
That was a very cute meet cute. Not cute.
Didn't end well.
Nope.
Okay.
No, it did not.
Nick.
Yeah.
I picked a roommate as the hottest in the freshman lookbook at college, but when I went to hit on the roommate, I ended up falling for her instead. I picked her roommate as the hottest in the freshman lookbook at college, but when I went to hit on the roommate, I ended up falling for her instead.
I'm going to take a 2-point guess. Felicity?
Actor Tracy Pollan?
Pollan?
Pollan. Any guesses after
family
that?
Ties?
Yep, family ties? Family yeah, family ties, correct.
I like that guess, though, Nick.
Okay, Sarah. He rescued me from mannequins that came to life. Well, that could be anything.
Not vampires?
Sarah.
Mannequins that came to life. Yeah. Hint.
Christopher Eccleston. Christopher Eccleston.
Oh, Eccleston. Got it. Doctor Who?
That's good for a point.
Nice
pickup. Mm-hmm. All right, Tara.
Yep.
He was the cousin of the leather-clad shark jumper who lives above my family's garage. That's a nice phrasing.
He was the cousin. Well, I guess it doesn't matter who the person is. It's Happy Days.
Yes, we're talking about Chachi and Joni.
Sure.
Yeah.
For once.
Happy Days. Okay, Nick.
Yeah.
She was assigned as my new partner in an attempt to discredit my work in the paranormal.
The X-Files.
That's good for two. Mm-hmm. All right, number 15. And let's do a score break after this.
Okay.
For Sarah.
Yep.
I thought he was just the boy next door, but he's actually a ghost inhabiting the house into which my family just moved.
Oh, right.
American Horror Story?
Nice.
That's good for 2 points.
Very close game. Not as close as the first game we tried to play.
No, the first game was very close, as it was 0-0.
To zero.
Soccer.
Our actual scores in this game, the real one that we are playing, are Nick has 6, Sarah has 6, I have 7.
All right.
Great. Very, very close.
Okay. So number 16, back to Tara.
Yep.
A chum introduced him to me at the morgue. I deduced his entire life story in 30 seconds.
Sherlock.
That's good for 2. That was Watson and Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Still a meet cute.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean still?
What's that? Still and forever.
Yes.
I cut him down from a flagpole on the first day of school.
Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
That's good for 2 points.
Thank you, Picky.
Sarah.
Yep.
After I attempted to get a job at a bar, she offered to critique my resume and buy me a drink.
Hint.
Laura Prepon.
She offered to critique my resume. Orange is the New Black?
Nice.
Wow.
Good for Total a point. Guess. All right. Oh, we missed number 17. Oh. What was number 17, by the way? Remind me.
Spread Eagle?
Yeah. Yeah. Tara.
Yep.
We were hit by lightning while doing community service, but I didn't fall for him until his super version came back from the future. Ooh, tough one.
We were hit by lightning?
Yep.
Hint.
Antonia Thomas. Yep.
No idea.
Oh.
Something British?
Yes, something British.
Misfits?
Yep. Yep. Okay, Nicholas.
You don't know that's his full name.
But it is. I like saying
oh, now we know.
That is my official, yeah.
Shut up, Tart, all of you.
God, I wish.
Okay, I turned myself into the FBI year after years on the run so that I could work with her because we have a mysterious shared past.
Oh, this would be Neighborhood Watch the Series, a.k.a. The Blacklist.
That's good for 2.
Nice callback.
Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
She was dating mi hermano. She was dating mi hermano.
Hint.
Well... Patricia Vasquez.
Velasquez.
Thank you.
I don't know.
Anybody?
Arrested Development.
Yep. Arrested Development. Okay, Tara.
Yep.
I replaced the human resources representative at his office who ran off to Costa Rica.
The office.
Good. For 2. Nick. I was hanging out in the freezer while he was buying milk. He left behind only a Band-Aid with which to track him down.
Oh. I need the hint.
Ben Schwartz. Oh. Tough hint, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
House of Lies?
Yeah.
No, good guess.
I was going to mislead you. I knew it. That's Bob's Burgers.
Oh.
Guest voice in that episode. Okay, so we are to Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
During one of my first days as a college student, I knocked a stack of books on his head in the bookstore.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Nice.
2 points.
Ah, yes.
That's Buffy and Riley.
Riley.
Potato Nose.
Oh, Riley.
Old Potato Nose.
Okay, Tara?
Yeah.
He ran over my glasses with his hearse, but fortunately, I just had eye surgery and didn't need them any longer.
With his hearse. Ugh. Hint.
Lost it. Okay, got it. Moreau Chambers. Monroe.
Monroe Chambers. Nope, I got nothing.
Ouch. Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Ah, oh, no.
Oh, man.
Oh, you got to turn in your Canada card.
I do. Yeah. Oh, no. Where's my passport going?
Okay, Nick. I fell into his lap while singing karaoke and dislocated his nose with the microphone.
Oh, Trophy Wife.
Trophy yes. Wife is correct for two. All right, Sarah, bring us into our score break. I was sent to investigate the murder of the homecoming queen in the town where he was sheriff. Mm-hmm. I was sent to investigate the murder of the homecoming queen in the town where he was sheriff.
Hint.
Kyle MacLachlan. MacLachlan.
Yep. Oh, Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is good for one.
Still super duper close, you guys. Sarah has 10, I have 11, Nick has 12.
Whoa, all right. So everybody's got, I think, three left?
Oh, boy.
Three questions left, so.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exciting.
Okay, Tara.
Yep.
I bailed him out of jail in New Orleans after he got into a bar fight at a medical convention.
Hint.
Hugh Laurie.
House.
Good for one. Good for one.
Yep.
Okay, Nick. Mm-hmm. I met him through a group interested in a cult comic book and fell for him when we had to go on the run from mysterious forces. Either Heroes? You know this or you don't, I think.
Heroes?
Incorrect. That was Utopia.
British Utopia. Yeah. The good one.
Yes. Not the...
The weird American one.
Okay, Sarah.
Yep.
I worked with him in a coal mine, but when he returned to town years later, we were on different sides of the law. Meet cute from what show? Meet cute from what show?
I'm glad I went back and watched those first episodes. Justified.
That's oh my God, we have a three-way tie!
All right. Okay.
It's exciting. Did I just screw up the levels? Yes.
Nope. You're good.
Okay.
She was the wife. Oh, sorry. Wrong one.
Okay.
We appeared together on the Real World Sacramento.
Oh, happy endings.
Correct. Nick, she was the wife of the Poe-obsessed serial killer I was tracking.
Picky.
Picky. One off from what that should have who that should have gone to. She was the wife of the Poe-obsessed serial killer I was tracking.
The following?
That was good nice. For two.
Oh.
Okay, Sarah. I hired him as my live-in housekeeper. I hired him as my live-in housekeeper.
Hello.
Meet cute.
Oh, did we lose
I'm sorry,
Sarah?
I didn't hear any of that.
No problem. I'll repeat that. Here's the scenario. I hired him as my live-in housekeeper.
Hint.
Judith Light.
Oh, who's the boss?
That's good for one. All right, here comes everybody's last question.
OMG.
Is it still anybody's game?
Well, Nick, yes. Okay. Sarah has 13, Nick and I are tied with 14.
Okay. Here we go. Exciting times. She came into my office. She came into my office thinking it was her new therapist. She poured her heart out to me for an hour before I had the heart to tell her it was a mistake.
Oh, God. Hint.
Callista Flockhart.
Allie McBeal?
1 point. 1 point. Okay. So what's our scores now?
13 for Sarah, 14 for Nick, 15 for me.
All right. Nick.
Oh, boy. Okay.
She moved into the apartment below me in Minneapolis, and soon we became best friends despite our differences.
Oh, Minneapolis.
Yeah, Minneapolis. Charlie's Angels!
I need the hint.
Okay. Your hint is, this is not going to help you, though. Mary Tyler Moore.
The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
All right, that's good for 1 point. Okay, so what's our score now?
Nick and I are tied with 15. Sarah has 13.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
This is going to be interesting. Here's your meet cute. She arrested me when I first rose from the grave, but now we're trying to stop the apocalypse together. And Picky rewards you for missing the following by giving you this one. She arrested me when I first arose from the grave, but now we're trying to stop the apocalypse together.
The apocalypse?
Yeah.
All right, well, I can't stay in this unless I guess right now, correct?
Okay. Yeah.
Scorekeeper?
Correct.
I really don't know what it's going to be, so let's try True Blood.
Oh, Sarah.
What is it? I don't know it either.
It's Sleepy Hollow.
Oh!
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a misstatement of what happened, but that's fine.
Okay.
You all go ahead. I'll be over here in the dark.
Are they not trying to stop the apocalypse together? Was there a
miss? That wasn't the problem. You didn't really like rise from that. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, wait a sec. I mean, I think you would have got a Sleepy Hollow question.
If the premise was correct.
Yeah.
Right?
It's her show.
Can everybody agree?
Yes.
Okay.
I can agree.
That would make it a three-way tie, correct?
Yes.
I think we could agree Sarah would get it if that meet cute was properly
described correctly. Yeah. Absolutely.
I probably should have gotten it and didn't. So
No.
I'm fine giving her those points if
you
can.
Yeah, I'm good.
They're not mercy points. They're
correcting
a mistake point.
Because sometimes the better you know the show, the more likely you are to be tripped up if it's not
it's
exactly
true.
Right.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, so it's a three-way tie.
So it's a three-way tie.
Holy shit.
First person to shout out the answer wins.
Oh, God.
I don't want any answers until I'm done reading.
Okay.
Okay,
okay, Alex.
Okay.
The
yep.
last word of the clue is off, so you know when I'm done.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes. So
it's the second to last word.
Until I finish the question.
Yeah. I'm done reading. You guys, fuck off.
For a United Empire loyalist and a DAR, you two are sure on the same page.
Okay. Are we ready? Here comes the tiebreaker. Shout out when you know the answer after I finish. He was the lead detective at the ramshackle detective agency I maintained as a tax write-off.
Remington Steele?
You're out.
Oh!
Nick and Sarah. He was the lead detective at the ram...
Moonlighting.
That's it!
Nice!
Valued guess!
Valued guess.
Good job, Nick.
Yay. I'm glad we got through that. That was fun.
Exciting.
Yeah, that was good. Apologies to our first game time author. I'll contact you by email and give you a little something extra for your troubles. And apologies to our panelists today. That was really tough, and I probably should have been able to tell.
It ended well.
Yeah, it did. Okay, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We produced the tin for the start of Justify's last season, while Liv monkeyed around with the second episode of Face Off. And everyone considered how alike Sarah Bunting and Sarah D. Bunting were in last week's Downton Abbey. We went around the dial with stops at The Nightly Show, Togetherness, Wolf Hall, Better Call Saul, and Restaurant Startup. Nick unsuccessfully dipped into the Gilmore Girls well again for the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Nick, playing on behalf of the guests, was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember, guys.
Yes.
Given that everything that happened, I'm going to take this episode as a success. I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano...
Your drink is disgusting.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Your drink is disgusting.
And Nick Reinwell Jones.
What's the DAR?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Now the world don't know.
Different strokes. Different strokes. Different strokes.
Everybody's got a way to shine.
Different strokes. Different strokes.
I've never seen you lose it like that, Tara.
Oh my God,
I'm weeping.
I love it so much.